And actually, the words are wrong already, because it should be the other way around. How should we say that? Fail and female and he female, something like that. The word female contains the word male, and it's wrong. It's the other way around. The female is the core of both of them, and the male is an addition to the female. So we need to get out of this perception of the wording, the linguistic, the politics of male domination and female subjugation. We need to go back to an understanding of humans and humanity, and that is what I would like to sort of pull out and show in juxtaposing male and female. And juxtaposing is the precise word. It is the complementarity between the two that makes the magic possible, and it is essential that the two complement each other. And within the body, it's so easy to see that the one and the other are aspects of the same underlying principle. However, that underlying principle is mainly embodied in the female, and the male has less of importance than the male chauvinist politics gives it. Sorry, guys. You have nipples, not to lactate, just because the female is the core of the species. Okay, male and female are variations to a theme. Now maybe it's better to go back to cellular biology, because there are some principles which are seen there already, which then comes in play later with the difference between male and female, more specifically the ratio between the vagina and the penis, or let's say the circle and the rod, because we see that circle and the rod also in the circular DNA and the linear DNA. There are actually very many principles in that relation between male and female, which are based on much more fundamental relationships, such as the circular and the radial, the circle and the line. And that is something which you already see at the molecular level, where you have ring hormones, ring molecules and rod molecules. And that you already see at the tetrionic quantum field, in the dynamic of the linear flow and the circular flow, and both of them are needed. So you need to be able to switch between the two, and the male and the female only together can combine into this continuation of the species. So in that sense, it is necessary to understand that in talking about male and female, it is not about sex, it is not about gender, it is rather about continuity and variation. It is about preservation and alternatives. And that's why it's good to look at the earlier life forms. Because from that quantum level upwards, where you have the linear flow and the circular flow, and both are needed in order to be able to change the configuration of atoms in molecules, at the higher level you then have the spores, which then can connect up in a different way to form vital systems, which then connect up in a soap bubble to form a microbial system. But all of them are based on the underlying spore or the somatite. So in the earliest life forms, as Gaston Nasson has described that in his dark field microscope research, there is a cycle going from the spore to the fungus to the virus to the microbe. They're actually variation on the same theme. The spore is, say, a point. The fungus is a line, a chain, is linear. The virus is multidirectional, so it's already a plane, it's more complex. And the microbe is actually, say, a virus encapsulated in a bubble of oil, with a surface, bubble of water with the surface of oil. And that creates a kind of interchangeability in which signals of the environment can be processed in a wider range of interpretations. Let me go to a metaphor of a television dish, basically like a large vaginal, or like a large circle. You have this open space for receptivity, the yin, and then centered in the middle of it, well centered, well placed and well directed, you have this erect penis of the microphone, of the receptor, of the yang. It is only in combination that you have the meaningfulness. The specificity of the microphone in the radio dish gets meaning because of the dish being able to collect all of the information and bring it together. So throughout the various animal species, you can see how these principles are used in combination. The dish on the one hand, the rod on the other hand, the ring molecule on the one hand, the rod molecule on the other hand. In our body, we then also see that in many different ways, and in the relationship between the male and the female, the distinctions are minimal and fundamental. It is evident that the story of the Bible is wrong. It is not that Eve was cut from the rib of the Adam. Actually, that was simply a mnemonic, that the male principle was represented by sheen, which is a vertical stick with two side branches, and the female principle is represented by yod, which is a vertical branch with one side branch. So if you remove one of those branches, one of the ribs of that tree, then you get the female symbol. So this is a erroneous reference to, say, symbolic code notation. What you see in the body is quite the opposite. That is that the female has the X chromosome and the male simply has a scruff by with three quarters of that, the Y chromosome. There's one branch lacking, and actually the male cannot turn itself on. It's only the female X chromosome that has the capacity that to turn on the receptivity for the Y chromosome. So in that sense, in the relationship between male and female, is definitely the female that is the core of the species. I compared a bit to the story of the chicken and the egg. It's always the egg that is the form from which life emerges, and in this case it is the female which is the carrier of life, which has the continuity of life, which can give birth. But there is a trickiness in that, because in giving birth, the female needs to have extra information. The female needs to be able to transcend the knowledge that is in the X chromosome and in the female body and in the female being. And in order to understand that, it is good to look at earlier version of life yet again. Before I showed that Gaston d'Assens showed that the spore, the fungus, the virus and the microbes are all connected. But when you look at the biology of plants, then it was discovered that when new land was created, for example, by draining a lake and using the land for agriculture, that in the first year it was the asexual plants that came in. Basically, those are the cloning species. These are able to very quickly disseminate, they will multiply, and they will just go on and on. But at the moment that the soil changed, because the plants were standing there, it was discovered that due to the presence of these plants, the soil was changed so much that these plants could no longer grow there. So these plants no longer grew there, and in the place of the asexual plants came the sexual plants. And the difference is that the asexual plants find the territory, they clone out, they fill it up, and in doing so they transform the soil. But the sexual plants, when they grow somewhere, they make use of the changing of the soil. It's like a two-component glue, but then the other way around. A male and female does the same. That the female of the species and the male of the species, they are like stereo loudspeakers. They have one part of the symphony and the other part of the symphony. Together they have the whole music. So in this understanding of the plants in these new polders, where then the asexual plants were replaced by the sexual plants, it also became clear that sexuality has this different kind of stability. They can adapt to changes in the landscape. And that is what we find in the female and the male of the species in life forms. That they can preserve a specific kind of information of survival of the species, but they also need some extra information so that they can adapt, grow, develop other capacities, maintain themselves by adaptation, by transformation. This is a nice point to go into some of the characteristic role pictures that some societies present of female and male, where essentially they say that the female is the keeper of the children, she's the keeper of the hearth, she's the keeper of the home, and she will tend the garden which is right next to it. While the male is the one who goes out, climbs the mountains, goes hunting, comes back with whatever he found, and brings it back to the home. So it's basically the picture of the homesteader and the nomad, or the harvester and the hunter. It is the picture of, say, a component which is in rest and a component which is in unrest. So within the human, the female is the element that is in rest, and the male is the part that is in unrest, that seeks change, seeks variability, seeks adaptation. From a survival perspective, I just imagine that you're looking at a valley between the mountains, a village living there, and females and males being there. And for the female of the species, it's much more important and interesting that they meet up with a male who is able to climb the mountain, go to the other side of it, and come back again. And some women are satisfied with half of that equation. So when a guy comes up from over the mountains, they say, well, this is a guy who has new information for my genes, let's take it in. It is that quality which is necessary, because at the moment that something happens in that valley, then information is necessary that the family, the tribe, can move out of that family to a different environment. So then it's practical that in the family pool there are people who know how to get across the mountains, where to do it, and how to survive it all. This is not just a metaphor, because when you look in the body, you see that the women have 15% more fat deposits, and for most people it's evident, and the males have 15% more muscle. And there is a quite, how shall we call it, there's an interesting little book which is called Der Mann, ein Irrtum der Natur, The Man, Mistake of Nature, which basically says that with the Y chromosome, the men just can't notch it, they're just too short, because with the Y chromosome, they don't even manage to get the estrogen cycle correct. They don't get further than the testosterone. And in the book it also then says that, and now look at this whole story of the women having 15% more fat and the man having 15% more muscle, and what they do with it, with the 15% of the muscle, they suppress the female. That's stupid. Yeah, indeed it is, but if you look at the larger perspective, with the extra fat deposit, the women can survive longer in dire circumstances. The pain threshold of women is much higher than that of men. The patience of women is often much higher than that of men, depending on the hormonal levels, we come to that. The survival and care capacities of women is often much higher than that of men. On the other hand, the men with a 15% more muscle, they are more forceful, more active, more dynamic, more enterprising. They will find more solutions, more alternatives, more options elsewhere. And as a result, add that to the picture. Again, it's the whole story of male and female is that it is about the complementarity of the two. So when looking at the one and the other, to understand that there is a reason why the one is like the one and the other is like the other. And there is a reason why the men, poor souls with their lacking branch of the X chromosome, they can only do the things that they are. Because on the other hand, by lacking the encompassing wholeness of it all, they have a kind of focus or a limitation, a direction, which makes it possible to go wider and further than what is there already. And for the gene pool, that is essential, because that what is already works, but does it also work in a different setting? It works for right here, but does it also work on the other side of the valley? It does work for now summer, but does it also work for the coming winter? It works now in the icy times, but does it also work for the tropical times? In nature, these variations take place all the time. They're logical, they're inevitable. And in the species, in the different life forms, all of that is built in. So the female and the male together have the stability of the female and the variability of the male so that they can learn and grow in changing environments. In the body you can see that. So now let's move the picture from looking at the male and the female from outside in their setting in the landscape to the difference in the male and the female in the body, and then you see that the differences are very small. The men have nipples, the women have nipples, the men have a vagina, the women have a penis, but it's just organized differently. One of the reasons that these odd sex gender surgeries can't take place is because of the, say, symmetry between the vagina and the penis, but there are many more symmetries in the male and the female. Perhaps it's better to call them dualities or complementarities. They're already found in the original initial fetal difference between the Müller and the Wolf ducts. That in the origin they're quite similar, but then the differentiation takes place later, and then they grow out into the complementary sexual genitals. Likewise, in the X and the Y chromosomes, most of it is similar, but there is that extra part in a female which is crucial for the creation of the species, and that is where the female then has the nipples which are functional, the birthing capacity which the male can only trigger. But it's still the female that is the core of the species. And in the bodies you can see then how they complement each other. And I'd like to just look at the relationship between the neuronal and the hormonal balance and relations interactions in that. For those people who know the Seal of Solomon, the Star of David, it's an old Far Indian and also Chinese symbol which symbolizes the up pointed triangle and the down pointed triangle, and often it is taken to represent that had the male has the wider shoulders and the female has the wider hips. So in that sense you can say that the triangle with the sides on the top represents the male, and the triangle with the base at the bottom wide represents the female. But it is the complementarity of the two, that how they merge and together bring one point in the middle for both of them, where you can then see that the male and the female together form the human. As the Chinese, the Greek philosophers already said, and the gods created the humans, and actually that worked so well that the humans basically further ignored the gods, and so the gods decided to solve that situation by cutting the humans in half, and out came the male and the female. Which of course were only happy again when they were connected. And it is that image of the male and the female together being one, which is understood in Chinese philosophy, Indian philosophy, and say all these Angkor temples where the sexual symbolism is evident and overt on the temples, because at that time people understood that in the sexuality the complementarity of male and female is activated, which is also a shift of consciousness from individual to human consciousness, and thereby also the realization of the connection between the body and in fact the universe as a whole. That connectedness in a body we experience, say, most pronouncedly in the neuronal hormonal system. They're both part of the electrical communication system of the body. As Cyril Smith says, the neurons are like the telegraph wire, the telephone cables, and the hormones are like the telegram messages or the mail postal deliveries. Both of them are electronic messaging devices. The neurons, like the telephone, has this pulse code signal, Morse code, which was invented by Tesla, is the communication system of pulse information relay from one part of the body to another. so across large distances by a very specified and specific pipeline, you can immediately give an information impulse from one cell group to another, with of course a possibility for immediate response. So it's very selective, very precise, very specific, and very immediate. Basically, you would now call it remote control by cable. And the hormone system is basically like a newspaper delivery system. All of the households get the same communication. Some will take it in, some will read it, some will act on it. It's a wide delivery system. It takes a while, that is very non-specific, but it will have the desired response. Typical in the difference between the neuronal and hormonal, even though both of them are electric, the neurons are carriers of signals through the length of their cables, and the hormones are actually an electromagnetic spectrum. So it is like a code key for a message. But in the way it is taking place in the system, the neuronal communication is more at the electromagnetic level, while the hormonal is interpreted more at the chemical level. And that is mainly because doctors don't learn much about the bioelectrophysiology. They're about 150 years behind on that. So in the body you actually have this whole electromagnetic system, but there is a difference in the bias or the predominance of that in the male and the female. In a sense you can say that the men are more neuronal and the female are more hormonal. This is something which is very easily seen in their sexual or erotic or amorous responses to the other species. There's interesting research done on what triggers the attention of the male, what triggers the attention of the female. And it turns out that the male goes by the first visual response. Most often it is actually an expectation response. So very often it is an idealized internal image. They're like hunters looking for prey. Alas, poor guys. And then that means that when they go out, they have this immediate neuronal response. They look at a girl and sort of target the prey, that's it. And then they look closer, that's not it. So their illusion and disappointment, things are quite fickle and keeling over because they operate so much on that neuronal hunter level that they don't realize that they are actually not hunting for prey, but they're actually male and females connecting up. For females, their first response to partners or possible partners is generally described as a provider or a carer or a nurturer, somebody who will support, somebody who will provide the care and help that's needed, which of course is a, let's say, more, put it in a nasty way, a needy, greedy kind of image, potentially or possibly, just like the target hunter guy is a very small kind of perspective of understanding. But yet, in this general description, there is this complementarity that the male is visually oriented, and the female is feeling oriented. The first basis of the female is in all these research descriptions is oriented on feeling secure, feeling comfortable, feeling cared for, it's a feeling thing, while the male is looking for a picture. In that sense, you can also see that pornography is catered for the male as a pictorial seduction or a representation or image of their hunting views. And for the female, it is the home and garden kind of magazines. What kind of environment can you have? What kind of care, comfort, sensations can you derive from that? There's a whole lot more to say about the brain activities, male and female, forebrain, hindbrain, light, right brain, left brain. There's a whole more to say about the ratio from head to heart to hara to holy bone. It is relevant to say now that very often the male talks to the female from reason, and the female replies from, let's say, emotion. And those are just different wave bands, and most often that leads to a cross communication, which means that there is no communication. And I often help people understand that by referring to the difference in the kind of communication between men and women. When men sit together and they converse, it's a bit like they shoot laser beams, question and answer, problem solution. And as a graphic image, and then tell the story of the exercise that they did in military camps, training camps, where the soldiers then got a hand grenade, one of them pulled out a pen, all of them counted to 10, and at 10 somebody threw it away far enough so that they wouldn't be affected. The typical male conversation. The typical female conversation is that the women sit in the bath, and with their arms, with their body, they make the waves, and it doesn't much matter what the topic is about, as long as the pattern of the waves is merging together and connecting up nicely. And often people don't realize how different males and females are. As I found it in one book, as if in this culture, this is this assumption that at some point in secondary school, all the guys are brought to one classroom and all the girls are brought to the other classroom. And then in the guy classroom, they explain, this is how women work, this is what women need, this is what women are looking for, this is how you can provide that for women. And that in the other class, for the girls, they get the same explanation about this is what how men function, this is what they seek, this is how you can interact with it. But that class is never there. So the males and the females, the boys and the girls, don't realize how different they are, and they specifically don't realize how beautifully they complement each other. And as a result of that missing classroom hour, so to say, a lot of boys and girls in school are very insecure on how to deal with this other animal, which is different species, which are then described in men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Yes, Mars is the hunter and Venus is the harvester. Mars has the sword in hand, Venus has the planting stick in hand. They seem to be opposite, but in fact they're the same. The sword is a planting stick used for a different purpose. And catching a carrot is a hunt in itself. You need to know where to look and when to look. So there's a whole lot of activities which are then connected up on that. And by them you can see that the male and the female complement each other, and that in their complementarity they actually balance each other out. but you just need to know that it is the case. And in the neuronal, which is the fired up part of the equation, and the hormonal, which is the boiling soup part of the equation, the mix of the two actually comes into play in the sexual interaction. And it's very interesting that you can then see how the bridge is actually being built and how the discrepancy between the visual first image or the felt first sensation are correlated and interrelated, and that in the sexual interaction you have the same kind of process taking place as in the digestion of food. First physically you chew it, then chemically in the stomach you dissolve it with the acids, and in the duodenum with the enzymes you electromagnetically rip it apart, and then the information is taken into the gut wall. So you go from the physical to the chemical to the electromagnetic to the information realm. And in the sexual contact, first there is a physical contact, and then the male and the female respond to that physical contact differently. The male will have an initial neuronal activation because that's its predominance, and the female will have the slower hormonal response because that's where she's based. But by the continuation of the interaction in the female, the hormones shift the activity of neuronal activation, so the neural conductivity will change, will gear up. While from the side of the male, the neuronal activity will spread out into the body and will change the release of the hormones. So at some point, both the male and the female are then at the neurohormonal level. So both the neurons and the hormones are involved. And the longer that takes, and the longer they can stay in that state, the more of a cross-balancing can take place. And actually, the men learn to be more feeling, and the females learn to be, let's call it, more excited. And that builds a bridge which changes not only the chemical and the electro level, but also the information level. So the light body, the consciousness level, then changes gear as well. And very often that's where the telepathy starts to kick in. That's where the Indians and the Chinese are very clear on if the man follows the rhythm of the female, which means that the neuronal is following the rhythm of the hormonal, then it will all fall in line, and then this the neuronal and the hormonal can connect up to that consciousness. If not, then the male will man will have an orgasm or ejaculation and the woman not, or the man and the woman will have an ejaculation and an orgasm, but they will not have triggered consciousness yet. So there's this very fascinating interplay between the neurons and the hormones that they actually need to connect up long enough to not only shift, not only that the neurons change the level of the hormones, and that the hormones change the activation of the neurons, but that together they change the whole, let's say, the radio cloud, the activation energy, the consciousness level, the chi, the prana in the body, that everything flows faster, quicker, more connected, more integrated, but as a result also works as a kind of radio connector from the one to the other, which is where the telepathy then comes in. That is basically where we then have come to the conclusion of the story. It's about the relationship between the male and the female hormones, the neurons and the hormones, and the basis of it is found in, let's say, tetrionic at the quantum level, in the direct flow, in the circular flow, which later is seen in the rod molecules and the ring molecules, which is then later seen in the different species, and later comes up in the kind of local information and the added information. So in that sense, the neurons are the antenna for the new, and the hormones as the deposit of the qualities of the known. And it is important that both of them are needed, and both of them need to complement each other. And of course, it's fascinating that the most direct experience that the human species has of this fusion of the neurons and the hormones is in the sexual activity, where the neuronal and the hormonal from both sides are sort of reshifted so that they balance each other, and then lead to what is called the alchemical marriage, where the male and the female then suddenly discover that together they are human, and in fact cosmic.